He smiled wryly. Second, I think they are very, very mad at us. That brought a smile to Dante's face. Then it's all been worth it. He propped open his door to coax the ocean breeze through his room, and to defray suspicion as he sat in his doorway, one eye on his book, the other watching the hallway for Sombre. This tactic proved to be wholly useless. After an hour of a closed-door session between Sombre and Cav, Cav called a general assembly of the council. The council chambers looked barren. Callie was gone. Varla, too. Wint and Uluv were still in the Norrin wilds. Ollivander remained in the eastern foothills gathering troops. That left 7 councilmen out of 12. Dante hadn't seen their ranks so depleted since the battle at the White Tree more than 5 years ago. "Sombre's spies have paid off yet again," Cav said, once everyone was settled. "If you would, Sombre." Sombre's gaze flicked between the other priests. He squirmed in his chair. "I have some insight into the enemy's strategy. My source says it's straightforward. They'll knock out any major resistance left in the Norrin territories, then march on Narashtovik without delay." He fiddled with his collar. "Finished already." The priests exchanged glances.
"Well, shit," Tarkin said.
"How long are we talking until they're here?" Dante said. Sombre pinched the bridge of his nose with his brown fingers.
"We'll all be dead in 3 weeks."
Tarkin repeated himself. Maria leaned forward, a sneer creasing her lined face.
"I'm sorry. Did you say 3 weeks?
"Here is how my source expects it to play out," Sombre said. "The Gascon army will make one more effort to confront the combined clans. My source anticipates this will result in the dispersal or outright destruction of the clans. Either way, a small portion of the army will be split off to control the territories and destroy any holdouts, but it is further anticipated the territories will surrender at this point. A few clans will still defy the king, but when haven't they?" Sombre paused, chin twitching. "Once that is accomplished, they will march straight here. That march is anticipated to take 7 to 10 days, leaving a full time frame of 3 to 4 weeks before the Gascon generals are sitting in this room, congratulating each other on their victory."
"That is one potential outcome," Cav intoned, "and one somewhat less than sunny. Yet there is another option."
Dante could see straight through the nobleman's thinking.
"Oh no, there isn't."
Cav ignored him, meeting the eyes of the others instead.
"We could surrender."
"Bullshit," Maria said. "Ollivander would never stand for that. You try to pull that off and Callie will burst from his grave and strangle you himself."
Cav frowned delicately.
"There is a point when the honor of resistance becomes the folly of futility. I fear we have reached that point."
"Fear away," Dante said. "That doesn't change the fact you're not the master of this council, and it's not your decision to make."
"I never claimed I was," Cav said peevishly, "and yet I will not follow a path that ensures Callie is the last to ever rule this council. We cannot disgrace him and this institution by committing strategic suicide in lieu of facing the facts."
Most of the council looked pained, resigned. Maria was the only one who appeared outright defiant. Sombre looked outright disturbed, blinking repeatedly, his mouth tightly pursed.
"In any event," Cav continued, "it is not my intent to enforce a decision here and now, only to broach the option and give us ample time to prepare in case events unfold as Sombre's source foresees."
Dante clamped down his anger. They would not surrender. Not if he had to kill Kav himself and lead the troops from the very front. With no intention of tipping his hand, he left as soon as the meeting dissolved and returned to his room. He frowned. Had he left his chair pulled away from his desk? He'd hidden Kav's letters in his copy of The Cycle of Aron. He pocketed them and headed to Somber's room. After he knocked, Somber cracked the door an inch, eye gleaming whitely from the dimness of his room.
Yes, Dante?
Can we speak?
We are speaking as we speak.
Inside, Dante said. Alone? Somber's mouth turned down at the corners.
Are you going to knife me?
I'm not going to knife you.
Good. Just be aware I will know before you try, and will have no qualms about knifing you first.
Dante agreed. Somber led him inside. Three sets of heavy drapes blocked the windows, reducing the sunlight to nothing, and leaving the room as hot as summer cobbles. Two candles shed a little yellow light around the Spartan room.
Who do you think killed Callie?
Dante said.
Somber cocked his head.
A professional.
Hired.
By who?
The list is heavy enough to break your foot, isn't it?
Dante examined Somber's middle-aged face. He didn't know whether he could trust the former spy, but he ultimately had no choice. He couldn't prove the identity of the killer on his own.
I think Kav may have had something to do with it.
He exploited the situation very quickly, Somber said, highly suspicious.
You've thought about this?
Who hasn't?
Anyone who's inclined to not accuse their leader of treason, Dante said.
Contemplating whether someone could be guilty isn't the same as accusing them of being guilty.
Somber narrowed his eyes at Dante.
You, for instance, are highly ambitious. Perhaps you were tired of waiting for Callie to die. Also, you have been prosecuting this war with great ferocity, haven't you? Maybe Callie agreed with Kav and wanted to end it. Maybe you couldn't let that happen.
You think I did it?
I doubt it, Somber said, but unless a thing is impossible, I don't like to rule it out.
I think it was Kav, Dante said. He stepped in like he'd been expecting it. I found these, too.
He took out the three letters he'd taken from Kav and handed them to Somber, whose face took on the eager gleam of a child in the bakery.
Why would he write them in code?
Somber clawed the letters from Dante's hand so smoothly he hardly felt them go.
He's been sending an extraordinary amount of letters ever since you burned down Cassander's house. They've all been in code.
Dante's blood went cold. I need you to tell me everything you know about Kav.
Born in 867 PC, the second son of Ronimore and Deliria, Baron and Baroness of Landry. Showed first signs of an ethereal talent at 13, and took to the priesthood at 17. His older brother died in mysterious circumstances 2 years later, leaving Kav with a clear path to the barony, which he took only to leave in the hands of a steward in 897, when he returned to the priesthood with a clear path to the Council of Narashtovik. To the best of our knowledge, the family barrister had wrangled a way for him to retain ownership of his lands and title, even though priestly bylaws require...
Dante cut him off.
You know all this off the top of your head?
Of course, Somber said. Would you like to know what I know about you?
Are his ties to the capital still as strong as they look?
One of Cav's first cousins is 16 steps from the throne.
15?
No, it's 16. Forgot the Duchess of Derridan.
Cav's younger sister is married to the third son of the Earl of Prater. The other blood ties are more complicated, unless you understand Nolan theory.
Do you?
No?
No matter. Moving on. Cav visits his homestead west of Dolandon once to three times each year. He's spoken with Modigan in person more than once. To summarize, he has many long-standing connections to the king, the capital in Setevan, and any number of noblemen across Gask.
Do you think you can decode those letters? Dante said.
I have before. I haven't tried to break his latest codes. He changes them yearly. Not that it helps.
What he ought to do is hire me to create his codes for him. But if I were to suggest that, he'd know I'd broken his old ones, wouldn't he?
We have to act fast, Dante said. Try to decipher the letters. I can get more if you crack the code. I'm going to have a look at Callie's body and see if Cav's assassin left any clues on it.
He touched Somba's elbow.
Somba flinched. Can I trust you, Somba? This isn't just about the council. All Narashtavik depends on this.
Somba grinned like a ferret.
Why wouldn't you trust me?
Because for all I know, you did it.
The other man giggled.
That makes me wish I had. It would mean I've done a wonderful job misleading you to Cav.
Dante smiled and left him with the letters. He walked out of Somba's room and into a forest of armed guards. Several monks were there, too. Competent nether users. Shadows roiled in their hands. They were backed by two members of the council on top of that, silent old Joseph and Cav.
Dante Galland, Cav said. I will keep this simple. You are hereby charged with the murder of Callimandicus, High Priest of Aron, Viceroy of Narashtavik, and one of my oldest friends.
Chapter 26
Laughter burst from Dante's throat.
On what grounds? That you're completely insane?
Cav held out a knife, brown with dried blood.
This was found in your room while we were at council.
For one thing, that's not mine. For another, all my knives have blood on them. Have you seen my arms? I cut myself more often than most men have breakfast.
This was the gust that cracked the limb, Cav said. I feared this was your work from the very start.
Callie was my first teacher, Dante said. I wouldn't be alive without him. I would never have come to Narashtavik. He was my friend. Lyle's bruised balls. Why would I kill him?
Because he was going to ask for a ceasefire.
No, he wasn't.
I spoke with him myself,
Cav glowered. Sounds like he was making a joke you didn't get, Dante said.
He was extremely uneasy about the prospects of a direct war with the king. He was ready to begin negotiations.
Cav laid the heavy knife along his palm.
Besides, I tasted this blood with the nether. It's Callie's.
Dante's world went red. Someone put that in my room. Or you've had it all along and are using it to get me out of the way. I was 300 miles away when he was killed.
As if you couldn't have paid someone to do it.
Cav favored him with a tight and furious smile.
In fact, isn't that exactly what you endeavor to do in this letter?
He produced a piece of bleached parchment. Dante didn't bother to look at it.
I didn't write that.
I wished to deny it myself, but when we compared it to the other letters in your room, the writing matched.
The nobleman's face grew pained.
My denial starved, withered, died.
Dante snatched the paper from his hand. His head filled with stars. The handwriting was his. The same tilt to the F's and T's. E's drawn in a single outward spiraling loop. But the words weren't anything he had ever put to paper, and the words spelled out death.
This isn't mine, he said.
Cav bared his teeth.
Is that not your writing?
It's a forgery. A fake. I didn't order Callie's death.
Are you doing this, Cav? Are you implicating me to sweep away your tracks?
Enough!
Cav thundered in the tones of a patrician who spent decades in the pulpit.
I've told no lies and done no wrongs. We found what we have found. You will have time enough to rehearse your defense from the cells beneath the citadel.
Nether condensed around Dante's whole body, fog-like. The guards drew back, swords wavering. Dante forced the shadows to dissolve away. The act was as hard as drinking boiling water.
"I'll find your lies," he said, "and then I'll kill you."
Cav snorted and gestured at the guards. "Bind his hands." They locked him in chains and marched him to the disused dungeons beneath the keep. It smelled of must and old urine. As far as the scant torchlight showed, he was the only one there. The guards brought him to a room walled with stone and closed the iron door with a clang.
"You will be allowed to speak on your own behalf at the appropriate time," Carv said through the grill. "Despite your treachery, you are still one of Aron's children."
"Then let me speak to Blaze," Dante said.
"This reminds me. If you make any attempt to escape, your friends will be killed."
Dante pressed his face against the metal bars, slitting the window.
"Don't!"
"Then don't do anything stupid," Cav said.
"Send Blaze!"
Cav disappeared from sight. A torch in the hallway shed the barest light into his cell. He wondered if it was the same one Larimore had locked him in long ago, when he'd bluffed his way into the Citadel with the intent of assassinating the woman who'd ruled it. He walked the corners of the room, fingers trailing the cool stone walls. There was nether in them, faint, but present. Was there anything in the world beyond the shadow's touch? He allowed himself to be angry for a while. He needed to let it boil away, leaving him with a clear head capable of establishing Cav's guilt and exonerating himself. Somber's decryption of the letters might accomplish that, but he couldn't depend on it. His life, Narashtovic, Norrin, freedom, everything, hung on proving Cav was the one who belonged in this cell. So he sat, reached out for the nether, breathed. Soon he calmed. There could be something that would help him on the knife. There could be something on Callie's body. What about Callie's last words? Skunks and whispers. Had he been attacked by someone who smelled foul? A fishmonger? A dung shoveler? Unlikely to help just now, that. Yet if he could find the killer, he was certain he could make the man talk. If he could make the man talk, he could out Cav's treachery to the world. At least it was cool in the dungeons. He laid on the stones, hands clasped behind his head. He must have slept. Footsteps woke him some time later. Blaze's face appeared in the grill.
"Man, what have you done now?"
"Oh, nothing much," Dante said. "Just murdered Callie."
"Very talented of you," Blaze said. "Weren't we 200 miles away at the time?"
"You know how these things go. I must have hired an assassin in my sleep and forgotten all about it in the morning."
"Oh, I assassinated 5 people that way just last year."
Dante laughed lightly. "So... how long before they post your head on the city gates?"
3 weeks at most. They may want to save me as a gift to the Gascons.
Executing me in front of the generals would send a strong message that Cav's ready to bring Narashtovic back in line.
Blaze nodded in the gloom.
"And just to be clear, you'd rather not be drawn and quartered in front of the cathedral?"
"Ideally, no."
Dante explained Somber's involvement with the letters, and his own thoughts about where to go next. "I could be one clue away from exoneration, but I can't do much from inside these walls."
"If I can get you out, we'll have to find the evidence in a hurry," Blaze said.
"If Cav sees you strolling around the streets, he's not going to wave hello, unless it's with a butcher knife." Dante smacked the stone wall. "Don't worry about breaking me out. Worry about finding something to tie Cav to Callie's death."
Got it. Blaze pressed his eye up against the bars in the window. You're taking this pretty well.
A prison is only a prison if you let it imprison you.
Never mind, I see the madness has already set in.
Blaze disappeared. Dante faced the wall and sat and thought.
He had no way to gauge the time. Trays of food were brought in. A bucket was brought out. 3 days passed, or was it four?
Blaze dropped in to let him know he hadn't been able to find where Callie's body was being kept, but that Wint and Ulov had made it back safely to Narashtovic. There had been another clash between the Gascon army and the Union of the Clans. Both sides had been bloodied, but the Norren had fallen back once more. The clans had splintered, dispersing into the woods beyond Dolendon.
When Dante wasn't sleeping, he worked with the Nether, letting his thoughts come as they may. The food came twice more. The bucket went away twice more. Blaze returned.
I think I found something, he said.
Dante rose.
Oh?
You? It turns out you're in prison.
Very good. Now please tell me you found a reason for me to leave.
Well,
Blaze paced beyond the iron door.
I can't find the body, but I did find someone who knows where it is.
Dante ran to the door.
Who?
I don't know, some servant who heard I was looking for it.
Sounds none too happy with the way Cav's handling things. Guy's name is Amwell.
Know him?
No, but there must be 300 employees of some kind or other inside the Citadel's walls.
And in case you've forgotten, we've spent most of the last 3 years off crapping in the woods. I don't recognize half the faces here anymore.
Blaze clapped.
All right, so here's the plan. Tonight, I come down and pick the lock. They've only got 3 or 4 guards up top, so it should be no problem for you to put them to sleep or kill them if we have to.
I could try to drug them, too, if you know something I can get a hold of by tonight.
Meanwhile, me and Lyra will have a little wagon parked up top. I put you in a sack, I carry you outside in the sack, sling you in the wagon, and roll you out the front gates. Once we're past the walls, we'll meet up with Amwell and head off to see the body. If anything goes wrong, we'll have a grappling hook with a team of horses.
Sounds complicated, Dante said. How about I just walk out through the tunnel I dug?
What?
I dug a tunnel.
Let me see your hands, Blaze said.
Dante stuck them up through the window grill, and Blaze turned them this way and that.
Funny. Your fingernails still seem to exist.
I used the Nether, Dante said. I moved the earth until I was past the outer walls. Then I plugged it on either side so no one would see the holes. I can open it back up in seconds.
Well, fine. If you want to be boring about it.
How's 1 a.m, Sam, then?
When is that? I don't have any idea what time it is down here.
Blaze tapped his teeth. He smacked the wall between himself and Dante.
Can you open this up, too?
Sure.
Then I'll come down at 1. You let me inside the cell, and we'll both walk out the tunnel.
You want me to break you into prison? Dante said.
Just for a few minutes.
It's perfectly sane in this context.
See you at 1.
Dante grinned.
He napped immediately afterward. In the timeless darkness, sleep came whenever he wanted.
When he woke, he felt the contours of the wall, the Nether waiting there.
Blaze jogged down the steps a couple hours later. Guards didn't want to let me down again, he said. But since you're their master and all, I feel I should warn you they're susceptible to bribes.
Sounds like I owe them a promotion.
Dante pushed his palms together, then spread them apart. The wall between them curled inward, stone flowing like cool syrup.
That was disturbingly vaginal, Blaze said.
If that's what you think, Lyra may need to see a physician, Dante said. Come on.
He parted the thin layer of rock, papering the hole at the back of his cell, revealing a smooth-walled tunnel just wide enough to walk down without turning his shoulders. He lit a white light on his fingertip and strode down the passage.
"So there's basically nothing that can keep you imprisoned anymore, is there?" Blaze said.
"They could make the walls out of wood or metal," Dante said,
"which you could then smash through."
"Well, it depends how thick it is."
Blaze tapped the side of the wall. "Or they could stick you in a big glass box and put the box underwater, so if you broke the box, you'd drown. For the sake of global sanity, I'm glad you're not a fan of torture."
Over the span of a few steps, the tunnel changed from stone to dirt, sloping up beneath them. After another 100 yards, a set of hard-packed dirt steps appeared, terminating in a blank wall and ceiling. Dante waved Blaze away from the steps.
"This probably won't collapse all over me, but you might want to back off."
"I'm just going to head back to your cell. Better yet, back to my room." Dante took hold of the nether, webbed through the dirt atop the staircase, and pushed. A black hole opened above his head, spilling dirt and warm, moist air into the tunnel. Stars dotted the gap through the ground. Dante jogged up into the grass just outside the walls ringing the citadel. Blaze glanced up at the walls and gestured him forward. A slight and black-haired man awaited for them in an alley 2 blocks from the citadel. Blaze nodded.
"Dante, meet Amwell."
Dante shook hands.
"Thank you for meeting us."
Amwell bobbed his head. "Thank you for meeting me. I never met Callimandicus. I've only served the Citadel a few months, but I admired him for years. I don't believe for a second that you killed him."
"Well, we may be about to find out who did. Lead on."
"He's in the Carnotarium."
Amwell started down the street toward the hilltop cemetery.
"Oh, goody," Blaze said. "Think we'll have to fight any whites?"
"Do you know where, exactly?" Dante said. "That place is huge." Amwell nodded.
"I work there, sir. And it's the most curious thing. Since Carve brought his body to us, no one else has seen it. We've actually been ordered to keep the room sealed."
Blaze snorted. "Well, that is standard procedure for investigating a murder, isn't it? Lock up all the evidence, then accuse someone at random."
"There's only one reason Carve wouldn't look at the body," Dante said, "and that's if he were already perfectly aware who killed him."
"How will the body help, anyway?" Blaze said. "You're not going to do anything funny, are you?"
"What do you mean?"
"You know, make him sit up and tell you what happened."
"Are you crazy?" Dante said. "Why make him sit up when I can make him dance?
Just wait till you hear what I've got in store for your corpse."
"Oh, no. No, that's not happening. If I'm ever about to die, I'm going to kill you first."
"Then I'll have to preempt your preemptive strike." Dante wiped sweat from his hairline. After the stagnant must of the dungeons, the air tasted salty and fresh. It was still blood-warm, even in the dead of night, however humid and horrible. They strode through the grassy field surrounding the hill.
"Just so you know, I'm totally out of ideas if this doesn't work."
Blaze nodded sagely.
"Well, there's always suicide."
Amwell led them to the hole in the base of the hill. Above the entrance, a stone plaque showed Aron's millstone, the North Star perched upon the tip of its pole. Amwell unlocked the door and lit a lantern in the foyer.
"Please follow me, lords."
He turned and smiled. The lamplight gave his black hair a brown halo. The man led them through the maze-like catacombs. Within minutes, Dante was hopelessly lost. If Amwell were to drop dead, Dante would stand a better chance of tunneling back out than of finding his way back to the entrance. The passages smelled of death, old and new. It was manageable stench, however. The Carnotarium workers used balms and the nether to slow the decay. dousing the tunnels and rooms with perfumes. In spots, the scent of wildflowers drove the smell of rot away completely. At last, Umwell stopped in front of a closed door, no different from the 20 they'd already passed. He slipped the key into the lock and turned to Dante.
"He is inside, my lord."
Inside, a stained shroud covered the body on the stone platform in the middle of the room. A withered foot projected from the shroud's edge. Dante found a lantern on the wall and lit it with a thought. A hooked chain hung above the table. Dante affixed the lantern to it, ran his hands through his hair, and peeled the shroud from the body. It was easy to pretend it was just another corpse. He'd seen hundreds in his young life. When he'd helped establish the Carnotarium, he examined dozens just like this. The neck wound on his current subject appeared to have been the lethal strike. It stretched across the man's throat, black with crusted blood. With a gap like that, it was a wonder Callie'd been able to talk at all. The skin on the man's left hip, knee, and shoulder was white, marbled with reddish lines. But the areas around the blanched skin were brown, black, and bruised. "Was he found resting on his left side?" Dante said. Umwell tipped back his head and considered the ceiling.
"I believe so. How can you tell?"
"That bruising there, seen it on a lot of bodies. It looks identical to a beating, but I believe it's just where the blood comes to rest inside them once they die. It always shows up around the parts of the body that have rested on the ground." Dante made his way down the corpse. There were no other obvious wounds. That fit with what he'd heard through the loon. He went to Cully's fingernails, hoping the old man had fought back and scraped the man. If he found any foreign blood, he could follow it to the killer. But Kale's hands had been scrubbed and cleaned, fingernails too, except a crease of blood along his thumbnail. Dante's heart leapt. He touched the nether within it, but there was no accompanying pressure to point him toward the man who'd done it. It was Kale's. Remnants of his futile efforts to quench the gash cut into his throat. "Was anything removed from the room?" Umwell gazed at the ceiling again. "A small rug, soiled. His clothes, of course." He frowned. "Oh, and this." He went to a desk at the side of the room and returned with a white handkerchief spotted with blood. "This was fresh when we found it. Strange, isn't it? If Lord Callimandicus had used this to staunch the bleeding, you would expect it to be drenched, wouldn't you? But there are just these little spots." Dante snatched it up and reached for the nether in the dried brown spots. Pressure bloomed near the middle of his forehead. "Which way am I facing right now?"
"South. South-southwest, I think. Isn't that about the direction of the citadel?"
"It is." The man's mouth parted halfway. He stepped under the lamplight, gazing down at Callie.
"Does that mean the man who did this?"
Dante stared at him. Beneath the light of the lamp, Umwell's hair had the same two-toned appearance Dante had noticed when they entered the Carnotarium. While most of it was black, a few patches were a rich brown, including a solid stripe that ran back from the left side of his head.
"Do you dye your hair?" Dante said.
Umwell didn't look up. Instead, he went still. Too still.
"Can't say that I do."
"Why do you ask such an odd question?" Dante caught Blaze's eye, then nodded at Umwell, making a small gesture they'd worked out years ago for times such as these. Blaze darted in behind the man, locking his arms behind his back.
"What are you doing?"
Umwell shouted. Dante closed on him, running his fingers through the hair on the man's scalp. His black hair was indeed black from root to tip, but his brown hair showed three shades. Deep brown with a tinge of grey at the tips, where it was exposed to the sunlight, then black down to just above the roots. There, in a layer as thin as a cotton undershirt, The hair was stark white. Dante's skin prickled. You skunk.
Let me go!
Amwell twisted to his left, trying to free his arms, but Blaze bore down, cranking his wrist to the edge of breakage. Amwell gasped and went slack. That's what Callie said as he was dying, Dante said. Skunk! I thought it meant the killer was foul-smelling, but he was talking about hair. The stripe on your head, that's white like a skunk's.
This is madness! I am a tender to the dead, not an assassin!
You were too eager to lead me along. How long have you been spying on me? To learn what would set me at Cav's throat? Dante waved the blood-spotted handkerchief. This is Cav's blood, isn't it? Where did you get this? Did he toss it out after shaving?
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's not the only one, Blay said. Why am I on the verge of breaking this guy's arms over here? Tell him, Dante said. Amwell wriggled again. Blaze bent his wrist. Amwell went white as bleached parchment. Dante beckoned the nether to him, cupping it in his hands, spending some of its own strength to make it blackly visible to common eyes. Theatrically, he grabbed it in both hands and bent it into a wicked crescent. He extended his right hand, palm up. As smoothly as a patrolling pike, the blade honed in on Amwell's throat. Dante smiled without humor. Talk before this sorcerous sword bites through your throat. Behind Amwell, Blaze grinned at Dante's show. Amwell jerked away from the netherial blade. Blaze shifted his hips to take the man's weight and rotated his arm. Something popped in Amwell's wrist.
Stop! He shrieked. I was sent by Casimir of Beckenridge. I've been working with Wint for months.
Wint? From the council, Wint? Dante goggled. To do what?
I don't know,
Amwell said. Dante touched the nether to his neck and let him feel the chill. Amwell gasped out half a curse.
I think we were meant to undermine the council. I just did as I was told. That's all I know.
Undermined it by cutting off its head? Dante said. Amwell shuddered, ashen. Dante fought down the fury surging through his blood. Now you're going to repeat this to the rest of the council.
What happens then?
That's not for me to decide. The man's face twisted into a fearful sneer.
I want your assurance I won't be killed. My confession must be worth something.
Dante returned his gaze. I'll do all I can. Dante took down the lantern from the chain. Amwell led on. Blaze relaxed his grip on Amwell's wrist. The circle of lantern light receded from the room. The body of Callie fell into darkness. They emerged into the humid night. Amwell made no effort to resist or escape. The front gates to the citadel would be closed, as they always were, so Dante guided them back to his tunnel to the dungeons, continued through his cell, and took the steps up to the ground floor where he encountered three very surprised guards. I need the council assembled at once, Dante said. Don't try to stop me. If I'm in the wrong, let my fellow priests destroy me. Two of the guards wavered. The third, an older man who'd often seen to Callie personally whenever the old man had business in the city, nodded deeply.
Where shall we tell the council to meet?
In our chambers, Dante said. Wait to bring Wint until the end, if you can. If you care for your own life, for Aron's sake, don't tell him why we're meeting. The three men followed him into the citadel proper. The entry was scantily lit by slow-burning candles. One of the guards plucked one up to take into the unlit stairwell. Once they reached the upper floors, the guards peeled away to roust the councilman from sleep. Dante headed straight to the main chambers, where he instructed Amwell to sit in a chair in the corner on the right side of the doorway, out of sight until one had stepped inside the room. What happens if Wint goes batty? Blaze said. Putting him in an arm lock won't stop him from killing everyone with magic flying shadow daggers.
I thought you had strategies to fight people like us, Dante said.
Yeah, and I bet a lot of them end with me dying horribly.
I can handle him, Dante said. He won't attack anyone. It would only prove his own guilt.
Fine, Blaze said. Guess I'll just sit back and enjoy the drama.
Tarkin was the first to arrive. The old man gave Dante an amused smile.
Is my memory that bad? When did we move the prisons all the way up here?
Dante grinned back. His cheer was short-lived. Sombo came next, examining the scene with the quiet intensity of a bird of prey. He perched near the back of the room, watching. Joseph came next. He was as silent as always, but his long-faced stare spoke volumes of wary suspicion. Then came Carve. His eyes glimmered with anger above his aquiline nose.
What are you doing out of your cell?
Dante made sure the nether was close. I decided lying alone in the dark was less productive than figuring out who really killed Cali.
You killed your former leader, and now you defy your new one.
Cav summoned the nether to his hands in a black blur.
If you won't abide by the process of law, then it's time to enforce an older form of justice.
Stop it, Dante said. Tricking us into tearing out each other's throats is all part of their plan. Shadows tumbled around Cav's hands like mad moths.
What are these vagaries of yours? Is it your plan to confuse us until we no longer know true from false?
Just wait until winter's here. Dante held up his empty hands, letting the nether dissolve away. If you're not satisfied by what I tell you then, I won't fight back.
Carve hesitated, lips pressed together so tight they went bloodless. Tarkon cleared his throat.
Let him talk, Carve. Whatever he's got to say, you know it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun to hear.
I don't consider that a sound basis for letting a known assassin walk free.
Carve's frown turned thoughtful. How did you get out of the dungeon in the first place?
I walked through the wall, Dante said. A few of the priests chuckled. Carve's frown found its former depths.
You're not helping your case any.
I'll show you the hole once I've acquitted myself.
Is there no boundary to your arrogance? Your—
Cav broke off, distracted by the arrival of Wint. Wint kept his smart, sharp features carefully composed, but when he saw Amwell sitting in the corner, he flinched. It was just a hint of movement, a flickering retraction of his neck, and Wint composed himself an instant later, but Dante had been watching him as unblinkingly as the full moon. With that flinch, the last of his doubts dissolved on the wind.
"Hi, Wint," Dante said. "Want to tell them how you had Cali killed?"
Wint laughed in disbelief.
"Was this your scheme to be released from prison? To shift the blame from yourself by casting it on others as carelessly as you'd throw a sheet over an old chair?"
I was speaking with Cali on my loon as he was dying. He identified this man. Dante poured to Amwell, who gave Wint a sickly stare.
"Please tell them what you told me, Amwell."
Amwell dropped his gaze and spoke in a swift monotone.
"I was sent by Lord Cassander to work in conjunction with Wint. Our express purpose was the neutralization of this council."
"Stars of Aron," Tarkin whispered.
Cav's nostrils flared.
"Including the assassination of Callimandicus?"
Amwell's lips curled from his teeth.
"Including that."
"This entire conversation is a disgrace to this room," Wint said, casting about for support.
"There's no evidence here. Just the fabulous claims of the real killer and some drunkie hired from the street."
"And that assassin who tried to kill me when I returned during thaws," Dante said. "Did I hire him too?"
"I can't keep track of all your enemies for you."
Dante pulled the handkerchief from his pocket and handed it to Cav. This is your blood. They planted it to make me come for you, just like they must have planted the knife in my room.
Cav turned his head to Wint, as levelly as if it were on a swivel.
Is this true, Wint?
This is nonsense, Wint said. Absurdity. Maniacal slander. Nothing this child has said would last 2 seconds at formal trial, yet...
That's my blood on that rag,
Cav said.
Even his snarls had a regal tone.
Don't disgrace this room with any more lies.
Wint's righteous smile tightened until Dante feared it might break. Nether flickered throughout the room. Wint gazed out the black windows overlooking the bay on the far side of the room.
I have a story for you, he said. Once upon a time, there was a young man born to a poor family, the son of a fisherman and his wife. The boy studied diligently, perhaps obsessively, discovering a facility with the nether and a knack for theology. Despite the fetters of his lowly station, he was allowed to enter the priesthood. As a monk, his station no longer mattered. These people didn't care who he was born to. All that mattered was what he was born to do.
Wint circled around the long table, still watching the windows. The priests and guards tracked each one of his movements. He ran his hand over his mouth.
This order was so egalitarian, in fact, that when opportunities opened in the highest order of its ranks, the boy, who had in truth since become a man, though not that long ago, was allowed to apply and test for one of those positions. Miracle of Aron! He was accepted.
Yet short years after the ascendance of this son of a fish-gutter to the highest ranks of the land's holiest order, storm clouds appeared on the horizon of that order's future. He opened the windowed doors to the balcony, revealing low, black clouds that hugged the night's humidity close to the city. What would be the right metaphor for the decision this group had reached?
It was as if a bear cub, on seeing its mother feasting on a stream full of salmon, suddenly decided it had more in common with the fish, and decided to scheme with the salmon against its own mother. Madness. Hubris. A decision that could only result in the destruction of the cub by the very jaws and claws that had raised and fed it.
Let us back away from poetry. This priest, then, on seeing that the body to which he belonged had opted to betray its mother, decided he would do whatever he could to save his institution's life, no matter the cost. No matter if it meant being branded a traitor himself, exiled, hated, scorned and besearched centuries after his name should have faded into history's great haze. So he spoke to those his institution would betray. They suggested a solution. The solution was extreme. Vile. Even worse than this son of a fisherman had imagined. Yet, bitter as it wasn't half so bitter as the poison pill of witnessing the destruction of the order that had allowed this son of no one to taste the fullness of the world. So he accepted. Knowing it would likely mean his own death, too, of his physical body, as well as no more and no less than his soul. He took up the dagger for all its weight. Wint stepped onto the balcony. He turned to face the priests. Nether whipped around his face and hands.
I was instructed to kill Dante. Dante, the one pushing us to betray the motherland that would surely maul us. When that didn't work, I killed Kali, who was no less enthusiastic, and attempted to destroy Dante again by blaming him for Kali's death. Unknowing Dante was on the verge of escape, I sought to re-ensnare him, and in the process lead him to kill Cav,
whose will was too weak to trust he would sue for peace after all. All for the sake of my city, Narashtovik, and its council I love so well. Beneath the black clouds, Wint tipped back his head. I can't see Haran, nor his mill. The skies are too dark. Will they ever clear? He took a step back, hit the balcony railing, and flung himself over its edge. He disappeared without a sound. Kav cried out. Dante rushed to the railing, so did the others. Cloth flapped in the wind. Far below, something heavy and wet met the ground with a spatter.
Haran, sweet wheat,
Kav whispered. Dante turned to ask him what next. Amwell rose from his seat in the corner and wandered to the door, glancing around to see if anyone was watching. Dante reached out claw-like for the nether in Amwell's heart and squeezed. Amwell's face went white. He gasped, eyes frogging, and pawed at his chest. He fell and was still.
"What did you just do?" Blaze asked softly.
"You said you'd let him live if he helped you." Dante frowned. "He killed Kali." "But you made him a promise." "The man who killed Kali doesn't deserve promises. He deserves death." Blaze flung out his hands. "Then tell him that from the start. Don't lie to him. Don't promise him life when you mean to give him death. This isn't a game." "I know that," Dante said. "Games have rules. We can't afford to." "Well, maybe we should. Maybe if we did, I wouldn't lie awake thinking about that guy's face." "Rules are a luxury for those with the power to play by them. I'll start worrying about what's fair as soon as King Modigan stops forcing me to scramble for my life." Blaze shook his head. "You know, nobody makes you do anything. You always have a choice." The rest of the room watched in silence. Dante turned away from Blaze and met Cav's eye. "I'm sorry I thought it was you. Things are moving so fast. I moved too fast as well. I can't damn you without damning myself for the same sin." The hard planes and regal curves of Kav's face aligned into a single pained look. "We can't seek peace with the people who killed Kali. Do we have any chance of winning this war?" "Hell if I know," Dante said. "But if we don't, at least we'll all die together. Should we get started?" Chapter 27. From atop the city's outer pride gate, Dante let out a yell and scrambled down the stairs. 500 men shouted and pursued him up the boulevard. Sunlight struck the cobbles as hard as his own boots. He risked a glance over his shoulder. Faces snarled, swords and spears glinted. Dante pushed harder uphill, sweating in the stagnant summer swelter. Footsteps rang closer and closer. He had nothing more to give. The first troops caught him, falling in beside him with taunts and jokes. He grinned back. The citizen conscripts had been learning fast. Not that it took any great discipline to retreat from a hypothetically breached pride gate to the next line of defenses at the inn gate, but it wasn't the most straightforward activity in the world, either. The sprinters had to lead the way and ensure the route ahead was clear, while the main body of conscripts had to stay cohesive enough to reform if they were overtaken by cavalry. Then came the issue of what to do once they reached the inn gate, learning to make their way through it in a reasonably orderly fashion, to rush up the stairs to take fresh positions, to call out when they were ready to close the gates behind them. Which the conscripts quickly did, with a minimum of fumbling or confusion. Pretty good, considering the citadel guards had just rounded them up this morning. "Well done," Dante called from the tower, flanking the main passage through the inn gate. "Soon enough, we'll be the finest retreaters in all the land. See your sergeants for your next instructions." He continued uphill to the citadel. He had an appointment with Cav.
Nothing major. Just to decide how they'd spend the few days they had left. Dante detoured to his room for long enough to towel off the worst of his sweat before continuing to Cav's. There, Cav glanced up from a desk laden with messages, marching orders, and maps. "I've recalled Ollivander," he said. "The messenger should reach him within 2 days. Assume he'll require an equal amount of time to finalize his recruitment and 3 more days to return with whomever he's been able to muster." "A week," Dante said. "Should beat the king's armies here, at least. Any word what they're up to?"
"Conquering. At an alarming rate. And northward bound to boot.
They could beat Ollivander here if they wished, but it appears they're content to spend no more than half of each day marching, and the rest quashing all Norrin in reach."
"Sounds like we'll owe the Norrin a monument before this is done.
If we have any stone left after our graveyard is finished." Cav brushed dust from his doublet. "So where are your brilliant beyond-the-bend-in-the-river strategies for overcoming the inevitable?"
"Should I have some of those?"
"I have been led to believe it is your stock in trade." "I don't know anything about defending a city from an army the size of another city. Quite frankly, I'd be looking to Ollivander's lead on that front."
Dante rubbed his eyes. "Anyway, absurd and half-assed schemes are Blazer's specialty. If I can pry him away from Lyra, I'll see what he has to offer."
Cav nodded, then pursed his mouth in a way that showed the tips of his teeth. "I am not sure of the most graceful way to broach this, but I want you to know that, for whatever role I might be currently occupying within this madness, I intend for it to be temporary. If the Citadel's still standing once this is over, its next leader will be decided through the standard channels."
"By murdering the current leader and snatching up his mantle?"
Cav chuckled. "Preferably something a hair more civilized than Kali's methods."
Dante went to the dungeons to seal up the tunnel he'd bored between the Citadel and the outside, then made a circuit of all three of the city's main walls. Sealed Citadel, Ingate, and Pride Gate, to ensure they were intact and sound. He finished his rounds just before nightfall.
Somber came to his room minutes later.
Inside, the man fished into his pocket and produced the letters Dante had copied from Cav, along with an additional set of papers, translations.
"I'd forgotten all about those," Dante said.
"What do they say?"
Somber gave him a sharp look.
"Can't you read? Do you spend all that time propped over books just to trick anyone watching into thinking you're literate?"
"I can read. I just figured you can too, and had already applied that heroic skill to the contents of these letters."
"Okay. They're love letters."
"Love letters? Why would he bother to encrypt those? I've never seen anything about celibacy in the cycle."
Somber tapped the folded papers.
"They're from a man."
"Oh.
Yes.
Do you want to blackmail him?"
"What?"
Dante reached for the letters. "My plan from here is to put them back and never mention them again. I can take care of that."
The letters disappeared in Somber's pocket.
"Are you sure you don't want to blackmail him?"
"Double sure."
"Well, have it your way. Maybe another time."
Somber departed.
Day by day, the city grew more quiet and more loud. Quieter because those citizens unwilling to defend it began to leave it, dispersing to the far eastern hills, or by boat to Yalan, or even driving their wagons into the hinterlands of the Norrin territories. Louder because, as the daily clamor diminished, what few sounds remained rang all the harsher. The constant clank of blacksmiths' hammers, the shouts of sergeants drilling volunteers, the occasional thunder of a rider bearing some new message from the lands beyond the walls. With the institutions of the council and city guard kicking in to oversee the bulk of the logistics, Dante found himself with an unfamiliar abundance of free time. Working with the commander of the guard, he helped raise a few new earthworks to shore up the city's most vulnerable points, such as down on the bay, where there were no walls against a seaborne invasion,
but he could only work for so long before the Nether gave out. Then he was just one more man with a shovel. Instead, he selfishly left the digs to spend his time as he pleased.